Sometimes you feel so alone and overwhelmed, you don't know where to turn. These days, it seems like there is no end to our problems. We invite you to connect with Silent Unity, the 24-hour prayer ministry, where someone is waiting to pray with you right now. Since 1890, Silent Unity has always been there. No judgment or dogma, just someone affirming the best for you. Call 816-969-2000 today. You can also connect online at unityprayervigil.org.
Serving spiritual seekers around the world. Unity Online Radio. Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here is your host, Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. Yes, I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you on week 7 of our 10-week sabbatical, which is taking world spirituality on the road. As always, I'm with my precious wife, Wendy. Hi, Wendy.
Hello.
And last week, we were in Hastings in Southeast England. We made a huge journey from Southeast England to Whidbey Island on the northwest coast of Washington State in the USA. So I don't know how many miles that is, but it's at least 6,000, I think, something like that. We're in the middle of a beautiful forest, but in between leaving Hastings and arriving here, we dropped back into Fort Worth, Texas, where we live, to conduct a wedding for a bride that I've known since she was 2 years old. So that was very special. Had to come back to do that. It was a total joy. Now we're at the home of Nick and Christine Tillotson, and it's a great pleasure to have them on the show. Welcome, Nick and Christine.
Hello. I'm glad to be here.
Hi, Paul. Thanks.
All right. I've known Nick since he was 2 years old. No, not quite 2 years old. I've known Nick since we met in India, and that would have been in 1977. And we traveled together on the island of Sri Lanka for three and a half weeks, and been friends ever since. I've only known Christine for a few years, but I had the honor of officiating at their wedding here at their home 2 years ago, and that was magical. I can't believe it's been already 2 years, right?
Yeah.
Incredible how time flies. So, Nick, tell us a little bit about your house for those who are interested, because you live in a very unusual place, don't you, relatively?
Well, it's a straw bale house, which I bought the land and camped on the property under some cedar trees 4 years whilst I was still living in Seattle, and wondered what the heck I'd done. And I was searching around for what I was going to build, and I saw a straw bale house, and I really liked the handmade look to it, you know, the sort of undulating walls. And I thought, well, I'll have to take a workshop, and I took a workshop or two and learned how to do it. So it's environmentally friendly, because straw is usually burnt in fields, and they can't. It's only normally used for bedding for animals, so there's not very many uses for it. So I thought, well, we'll give it a try, and it worked out great.
Well, it's covered in stucco, right? So you don't see the straw from the outside, of course. It's not like it's like an old, like some of those sod houses where you can still see the sod. With this, it's it just looks like a stucco house, but the walls are quite thick, aren't they? From my experience here, you probably can corroborate this, it's cool in the summer and warm in the winter, right? It has lovely insulation qualities.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. We just heat it with a wood stove, and since we're on 5 acres here, I mean, it's 17 years since it was built, and I don't think I've cut a living tree down for firewood to heat the house, but it, except for the exceptionally cold weather, the wood stove works beautifully to heat the whole house. Yeah.
That's cool. And, yeah, in case you were wondering, Nick is not originally from Washington State. But he's from Yorkshire. He's still got a strong Yorkshire accent, even having left Yorkshire 30-some years ago, right, to move to the States. But originally from Silsden in York, West Yorkshire. If you're from that area, I'm sure he says hello to you. He still feels a connection to the great county of Yorkshire, right?
Well, so long as I'm understood, then that's all right, yeah.
As long as he's understood. There we go. And that's all we can hope for in life, isn't it, to be somewhat understood, you know. We're all in degrees of confusion. And
go back to the house and tell them what you did this morning.
Oh, yes. And Wendy. Wendy and I took an outdoor alfresco shower attached to the back of the house. It's a beautiful shower unit, and it has everything you could possibly need. Shampoo, conditioner, soap. It's just beautiful. It's got twigs to hang your towels on, stones so you don't get muddy. And it's a beautiful, it's been exceptionally warm here, actually, in the Seattle area. So it was great. I think on Thursday it's going to go down into the 50s, and we may not shower outdoors on Thursday morning, but I'm going to give it another go tomorrow. It was so enjoyable today. So, yeah, that's been fun. What I love, like Nick said, about the property here is that it's surrounded by beautiful trees. There's a lot of spruces. There's a gorgeous, actually, cedar tree that we did the wedding under a couple of years ago. And in the middle of everything, he's got a clearing, and there's a organic garden and some ducks. What else you got here on the property?
Three different kinds of woodpeckers. The pileated, the hairy, and the
downy.
And the downy.
Yeah. Uh-huh. We also have the Yorkshire flags.
Well, we have the Yorkshire flags hanging, yeah.
Oh, there we go.
The white rose.
The white rose. You know, everybody has these Tibetan flags these days. You know, good Lord, so boring. But these people have the Yorkshire flags hanging, which is really, really cool. Yeah. In case you get a special blessing from the White Rose. But it is a beautiful place here. It's a retreat from the everyday. And Christine, amongst many other things she does, is she does body work and massage. And, in fact, we're staying in that place, right, which is dedicated to that. And it's got a lovely feel there. Tell us about that and some of the work you do.
Well, I'm a licensed massage therapist, and after just under 20 years of being a social worker, I decided to switch and do healing work. I was really called to do that. After I fell down a mountain, my ice axe and step broke loose, and I fell 75 vertical feet, and a tree stopped me. So I fell down into a sinkhole, and of course was pretty crooked after that. So the massage therapist that I saw really helped me, and so I just really decided that I was called to that. And then the bureaucratic social work didn't offer the spiritual balance that I was seeking in my work. That's what I love so much about it. And each person I work with is really different.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just approach it on an individual basis, that person's energy and what they're needing. And so each massage is really uniquely different.
Mm-hmm.
I did study massage in Thailand. I did a 30-hour Thai massage class, which was really fun. So that's kind of like assisted yoga in a way. So it's got a lot of stretching and things. So once in a while, I'll incorporate some of those great Thai massage techniques. It's really releasing. And, yeah.
So if you're in the Whidbey area, how would they contact you?
I have a website. It's you can either just Google my name, and it's Christine O'Kelly, O apostrophe capital K-E-L-L-Y, Christine with a K, Or my website is quite long, and it's dancingtreehealingandmassage.amtamembers.com. That's my American Massage Therapy Association is my insurance
right.
company.
Okay, very good. Yeah, so if you're in this this part of the world, check it out. Now, Nick, you've for many years you've been a gardener, right? That's what you do for a living. And even though you're now in your 60s, you're still going strong. And if you could see Nick and look at him, he's I don't think he has any body fat on him whatsoever.
Check out the picture on Paul's website.
Oh, there we go. We got some. Wendy's put some pictures up already. There's no extra ounce on him. And we were talking about this before. You know, when you learn to do a certain craft or skill or physical motion, you become excellent in that area. I know from being a bicyclist when I was young, even though I'm not the fittest person on the planet, I can get on a bike and still push it pretty hard because I think the muscle memory is still in there in my legs. And you were talking about that, weren't you, that you could do the various things without overly straining yourself because you've learned how to use your body in that regard. Tell us about that.
Well, in gardening, as I'm sure there's some gardeners listening, you bend down and touch the ground a lot unless you kneel. But so I haven't counted how many times I bend over and touch the ground every day. But if you think about it, then you get strong from that, and muscle memory is the right way to describe it. So, yeah, it's a yoga in itself is gardening, I'm sure. You know, it's just stretching and breathing and being out in nature. Very appealing activity to me, yeah.
Yeah, beautiful. And you, for many years you've commuted, right, from here to Seattle to do your trade. But you also have some work up here on Whidbey as well, right?
I work Tuesday through Friday, and I still have some clients in Seattle that I do on Friday, so I'm in Seattle once a week, but don't really like the carbon footprint that I'm putting out for that, because it takes a couple of hours to get there with the ferry ride as well, so it'd be nice to be out on the island all the time.
Right, exactly. And you've endeavored to have a sort of a low carbon footprint here at the acreage you're on, right? You recycle pretty much as much as you can, compost everything, live organically, right? You're vegetarians. So, you know, everything you do is geared to that. Like you said, you've tried not to remove any living trees, right? You remove the trees when they come down, use that firewood and things like that.
Yeah, well, we're all intrinsically linked with nature anyway, even if some people on the planet are not as aware of it as others. So it's just really nice to acknowledge the nature in our lives and to give it the sacred position that it desires, you know, that it requires. Love planting trees here on the property as well.
Right, and there's some beautiful trees here and some new plantings as well. And it's cool to see the rowan tree here because when we were in Scotland, spent 6 weeks there, we were coming across rowan trees or mountain ashes everywhere we went. So as soon as we walked in here, right in the front entrance, is a beautiful rowan tree in full berry right now. The berries are a gorgeous orange color. Deep orange color. So it's a lovely tree, the rowan tree. And it's also a tree that's supposed to be a protective tree, protects against the dark forces or whatever, if you believe in that sort of stuff. But it's definitely got a nice vibe to it, the rowan tree. And Wendy and I were talking about this too, because we've gone all the way from Scotland to Washington State, and yet there's a commonality, isn't there, of the beauty of nature. And yesterday, in fact, we went for a walk on the cliffs at the north end of Whidbey, and we looked down upon a northern harrier, bird of prey, You don't often look down on these things. You're usually looking up at them. And so it was really cool to see its coloration and the fact that the northern area is a bit like a falcon, very elongated and graceful, moving through looking on the banks of the cliffs there, the side of the cliffs, looking for its prey.
It was beautiful walking along yesterday. We've been in some beautiful countryside, and Paul and I were also talking about that there's beauty everywhere. Anywhere you are, you can find the beauty. I want Nick to talk about the comment that you made yesterday about making gardening as part of nature, and you've done that here where it's just organic instead of a refined like gardening technique. And you were saying it's difficult to do that, but I want you to talk about maybe your philosophy on that and your technique on that.
Yeah.
Well, when you see photographs of nature, you know, like a stream or a waterfall, that the way that it just happens on its own without man's influence at all, you know, that's, if we can, as gardeners, we try and imitate that. And if you, the more you can imitate how nature evolves, if you like, then the more beautiful it appears, you know. Because if it's a garden, for me anyway, if a garden is like rectilinear, and, you know, if you have a lawn that's square, then it doesn't have the appeal that curved edges have, which, you know, you see more sort of curved, not many straight lines in nature, if you look closely. And here we're working on introducing plants that benefit the wildlife that we have here.
Milkweed.
Yeah, Christine's just planted some milkweed. She can talk more about that.
To encourage the butterflies and stuff.
Yeah. And we have hummingbirds here, and we are in front of the house. We have a volunteer buddleia butterfly bush that introduced itself in a spot, and we just left it there. And we kind of, well, because we didn't decide to plant it there, it has a beautiful sort of significance, and it provides shade. A lot of shade, and it smells beautiful. And, you know, so it's a sort of a spontaneous addition to the garden.
Yeah, very nice.
And the bees love it.
Yeah, of
the
course.
Bees,
yeah.
Are always on it. And even though it is considered an invasive plant, mm-hmm. we've let it go, and then we are careful to trim it to mm-hmm. make sure it's not creeping into all of the natural odors around us.
Right, yeah.
And then we also let, in our vegetable garden, we let our kale bolt, and we let our radishes bolt, and we let our lettuces bolt. And you can eat the flower buds of the radish and the kale, and the bees adore them. So we just let everything bolt so the bees have additional food, because as we all know, the bees are struggling a bit right now. So,
right. I think it's expanding, isn't it, what we think of as gardening and as a beautiful. You know, a lot of people say a weed needs to be destroyed, pulled up. But a weed to others is a wildflower, right? Mm-hmm. And we were in Scotland with John Angus, and one of the things I remember was he would bring in his wild flowers and make posies for all the guests in little vases, and it was very beautiful using all the native plants, even the plants associated with the bog, you know, reeds and things like that he'd bring in, and people would say, oh, look at that, that's interesting, and he said, well, look, go outside, you'll see millions of them, but because they weren't used to looking at them in that context as a set thing in a vase, you know, it seemed unusual. So this is all part of what we're about on World Spirituality and on Unity Online Radio, is looking at the world differently, right? Seeing into it a little more, having a more keen perception of things, so that we're not just into the conditioning. Wendy and I were talking about this morning. So easy to conform to the norms of society or what the media tells us. But we're not normal. You know, I remember my late wife said, God, please make me anything, but don't make me normal. And there's something about that, isn't there? You know, it's to be abnormal in a healthy sense means to step outside of conditioning, and we're invited to do that. Coming back to gardens, you know, we were in Dunvegan Castle up on Isle of Skye, and they had a fantastic series of gardens there, and they had sort of a water garden, which was very wild, like you were talking about, and they had a circular garden, which was very formal. But then they also had a walled garden. What I like about walled gardens is that they combine the two elements. Because, yes, they're rectilinear, because it's a wall. It's basically an enclosed area. But within that, you know, there was all kinds of opportunities, because they had herbaceous borders, and they had vegetables, and they had wildness, and they had a fountain in one part. So it combined the two, and I like that. It was like, yeah, there's human, you know, the aspects to this, but within that is the incredible variety of nature. So I think they can kind of rest together sometimes, right? It doesn't all have to be just a wild garden. They can be, you know, the aesthetic of human influence.
Yeah. Well, a straight line does offer convenience for you know, watering and harvesting. I'll grant you that. Yeah.
you'll grant me that. You hear that? All right. And that's a lot coming from a Yorkshireman.
You know, this reminded me of my daughter and I was in Houston with her back at Memorial Day, and we went to this restaurant that their waiting area was their garden, and they had most of the produce that they were serving was from their garden. And the bartender was walking out, and he there was this wall, and there were these pot things growing out of the wall, and he was snipping the garnishes for the drinks he was making off the wall. And they served us a salad, and I said, "Oh, tell me that where did you get the lettuce? Because we're in Houston, you can't grow lettuce in Houston." And the waitress said, "Oh yes, the gardener grows lettuce in Houston. He uses the shade from the other plants to grow the lettuce." And I was amazed with that, because you know, it's hot in Houston and humid, and was thinking of it bolting, but listening to Christine talk about they let their vegetables and their leafy products bolt, and they eat that. And so it's re-examining, it reminded me to re-examine even the thing, you know, anything that you know, when you re-examine it and look at it a different way, it opens your eyes and changes your perspective and gives you a fresh, it almost makes me feel jubilant to think about exploring something that I know and is familiar with me, and exploring it again and looking at it with different eyes.
Yeah, there we go. You know, both of you love to travel, and that's seeing things in a different way, right? But unfortunately, the travel has become a sort of a double-edged sword lately. I was reading an article in the Guardian, I think it was, that said that since 1996, twice as many people are now traveling as tourists around the globe. And, of course, in 96, there was a huge amount of tourism compared to 30 years prior to that. So it's really taken off exponentially, which can have a negative impact. Now we're seeing these signs saying tourists go home in places like Barcelona or the Balearic Islands. And I know Sky, when we were there, it was totally booked out. There wasn't one single hotel room or bed and breakfast available. And there was a traffic jam. We didn't experience that, but we did see huge amounts of crowds at the beauty spots. And, of course, you can get away from the crowds, but still, there's a lot of people traveling. Is it still worth traveling? I know you love to travel, don't you? You've been all over the world. Nick, you've been to South America, I know, and you've been to Laos and Southeast Asia. You've been to India several times, Australia. Is there any place you haven't been?
Yeah, there's loads of them, and I'll never be able to go to all the countries I'd like to go to, you know.
What's your favorite?
I think it's over 40 countries that I've been to. Yeah.
So what resonates with you, Nepal?
I love Nepal because it's a country with few roads, and the villages, the only way you can get there is on foot. So that's just a beautiful way to go, you know, away from the sounds and smells of infernal combustion engines. And there's, you know, it's quiet, and the scenery is spectacular.
Right. I remember doing the Jomsom trek when I was in India for the first time, went to Nepal, and I know you've done that one. And you've also been back to do the Annapurna circuit, right? Which is, for those who are not familiar, the Jomsom trek took you through, I think, 9 biozones. So you'd go all the way from deep jungle to high desert, basically, and through all alpine scenery and through an amazing gorge called the Kaligandaki Gorge. And just it changed my life, really, going on that trek. It was just quite amazing. Because not just the nature changing, but the different ways that people lived in that natural setting. So you go from mud and daub houses to stone houses, and from ethnic groups were different, from the Nuaris in the lowlands to Tibetans when you got closer to Tibet itself. So, but the Annapurna circuit is pretty amazing, isn't it? Christine, what's your favorite place?
I would say Nepal is up there as well. I really loved Japan. I loved Japan.
So did I.
Yeah. There's a gentleness there.
Mm-hmm. Was it the first time you've been when you went recently?
Yeah, I've wanted to go there for so long.
Yeah.
But I also loved Nepal, the Tamang people.
Mm-hmm.
It brought me beautiful perspective. It was actually a manifestation of what I'd always wanted to do and I'd always wanted to be.
Right.
I did a very rural trek, and very, very few Westerners did
that. What part of Nepal is that?
It was out east of Kathmandu, up north to Sailong Peak.
Mm-hmm.
And we went through about 8 villages. And they were villages that were very infrequently visited, and the people there were so beautiful. They lived so simply at villages like little shacks, and we slept on a wood flat with a rug next to the goats, and the toilets, like, you know, there's a pig and where the toilet and the trash goes. It was interesting.
Right.
The people were so beautiful and so smiley, and so warm, and I noticed that they had something that sometimes in Western culture we lose sight of. We have so much choice that it's almost overwhelming. They have so little choice, but they just find the best in that limited choice.
Right.
And the laughs and smiles I shared were so beautiful. And there was a woman, model, and we were sitting in her kitchen, and she was cooking. We're all sitting on little tiny benches on the dirt floor, and she's cooking in her stone cookery area and putting things in the pot. And I looked around, and when I was little, my parents had National Geographic magazine, and I always wanted to be there in those places. And I looked around, and I felt like I'm living that dream.
By being, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, so it looks like we might be moving on.
No, that's fine. Now we're coming up for the break, just checking, but we've got a couple of minutes yet.
Yeah, I wanted to say, piggybacking on what Christine was saying and on Japan, is when we were in Japan, you notice that there's something very different about the people, the whole aura of the people while we were there. And I was reading an article in, I think it was American Way, on the way up here, that talking about that the people, when they retire in Japan, that they go back to work, and that they're so into being useful.
What do you mean they go back to work?
They go back, they retire, and then they go back to work later on in life, and doing anything, it doesn't matter. They're into being useful, and they don't have this feeling of being subservient just because they are hired to sweep the floor or whatever, that it's into being useful, that they're into being a part of a community and being a part of the fabric of the community.
Whole, yeah.
The whole.
The part of the whole.
Yeah.
And we found the same thing when we read stories about the folks who used to live on Rona on the island in Scotland. that they had limited choices, like you were saying, Christine, but they felt free. They felt like they had no time, that it was timeless. And when you live in modern society, that's the last thing you feel, is that you're timeless. You're always constricted by time. And we are constricted by time right now. We're going to take a break. God, that was a great segue, wasn't it? It's amazing how this stuff works. We're going to take a break for 2 minutes, listen to these messages from Unity. And I'm going to ask Nick and Christine about their spiritual lives, because I know they're both very spiritual. Join us then.
Wouldn't you like to share the programs that inspire you most with audiences around the world? That's easier than ever with mobile giving. Just text Unity Radio to 72727 and help us continue offering spiritual programs that change lives.
This is Reverend Ellen Devenport at Unity Village. Unity is supporting our friends who are dealing with the aftermath of Hurricane Harvey. Unity of Houston has offered to be a clearinghouse for donations that it will use to help others in the area. Or you could give to the Red Cross or other agencies, or just Google Harvey How to Help. But the most powerful thing you can do is to pray. Call Silent Unity 24/7 at 1-800-NOW-PRAY or go online to unity.org. We are all one, and we will get through this together.
Does the idea of being a vegetarian or a vegan intrigue you? Is it something you've pondered? Listen each week as Victoria Moran, author of Main Street Vegan, shows you how to make the shift to a sustainable lifestyle for both you and the planet. Each week you'll learn about the latest on the vegan life. It's not just for celebrities and moguls, but for people just like you who want to look and feel amazing, eat extraordinary food, help animals, and create a physical body perfectly attuned to spiritual growth. Guests will range from Unity ministers to vegan authors, activists, physicians, chefs, and even some of those glittery celebs. There'll be recipes, ideas, tips for going vegan at your own pace, and ways to make a difference for animals and the planet at every meal. Tune in Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Central Time for Main Street Vegan, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find.
You've been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
So welcome back to today's show. I'm with Nick and Christine Tillotson. And we're at their beautiful 5 acres in the forest of Whidbey Island. It's just glorious here. Been talking to them about various topics around connectedness and gardening and body work. And we want to ask them a little bit about their spiritual path. By the way, before I get to that, I have 2 articles in Unity Magazine this month. One is on the interpretation of a rock song by George Harrison. One's a column on empowered aging, so check those out. But I know you've been a very spiritual person. I know you too, Christine, or most of your life, right? And, looking for a meaning or whatever. So tell us a little bit. Give us a nutshell of where you've been and where you are right now in that regard.
I think the first introduction to meditation was a sort of a stumbled upon running. When I was a teenager, I loved to run, and to run on in Yorkshire on moorland paths and through fields and woods and things, and just from the experience of that, getting high, if you like, from activity. It led me to be curious about meditation, and when I was at college studying to be a physical education teacher, I saw a poster about TM, Transcendental Meditation, and I know that my peer, I said, I'm going to go to that, and my friends were like joking with me, you know, well, I don't know. Why do you want to do something like that? And anyway, I went on my own to Nottingham, and I had to bring a piece of fruit, a white handkerchief, and a flower. And I didn't know why, but I did. I took a white handkerchief and flower and an orange, and I learned how, very simply, how to meditate. Transcendental meditation way with a mantra, and I just been very curious about it, and I've had very great experience with different enlightened masters, Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh, Osho was his later name in India. He came to the States. Into Oregon in the 80s, and a very controversial spiritual master, but I got a lot out of the meditations that he introduced. After he passed away, I was led to another spiritual master who was extremely different, called Barry Long from Australia, and still using the technique that he introduced. And I'm also very interested in the American spiritual teacher, Byron Katie. She has a very great simple technique and writing process to help come to terms with problematic situations in your life. Just write it down on paper and turn it around and find the good in everything. So.
Right, to really see if this is true, right? Because I've been interested in a Michael Stipe quote recently, because I was watching a video or something. It said Michael Stipe had told Radiohead, you know, this isn't happening and I'm not here, you know, and no, to meditate on that. And you think, well, that's ridiculous. Of course you're here, something's happening. But, you know, that's only at the relative level. At the higher level, there's only that. There's only that presence that is beyond. You know, it's the nothing. The everything comes out of the nothing, the emptiness, the creative emptiness. And so to remind ourselves that we're not really here and nothing's really happening is to say the essence of me is above and beyond all the conditioning, right? And I think Byron Katie invites us into that because he says, how can I be totally sure that this is real, you know? What would it be like if it wasn't real? What would happen if I could release and let go of that particular thing that seems to be so true for me? You know, maybe it isn't as true as I think it is. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of power that comes when we can do that, yeah.
Yeah, just like what we were just talking about re-looking at an object that we're familiar with and looking and seeing it differently. I mean, that right there tells you that there's more than just what you see. There's, because you can change your view of something. You can revisit it in a different way, and that opens and expands your mind.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, Christine, you're interested in Byron Katie, too, and what other parts of the spiritual path have you been drawn to?
gosh. Well, I feel like that's just been since I came here. my
since
whole life.
You came where?
To the earth.
On this incarnation, yeah.
What Wendy was just saying really makes me think of this paper wasp nest that we have. That's so beautiful. And many people come to visit us, and it's in like this little tea meditation hut, and I'll soon get to what you asked me, Paul.
Okay, that's fine.
A little sidebar, but so many people say, oh, why don't you get rid of them? But we've found that they're amazing. We'll just stand there and watch them, and they're very, very harmless. And this kind of ties into my spiritual perspective. But they're just really quite gentle creatures. They're just going about their business, making this absolutely beautiful paper wasp nest.
Yeah.
And Nick did some research on them. They eat aphids, and so with our vegetable garden and all our flowers and plants we have, that helps the pollinators because their plants survive, and so they're an essential part of the ecosystem. So I suppose you had asked in a nutshell, but a lot of my spiritual perspective has stemmed, I think, mainly from Buddhism, but I'm also a musician, and I play music. I have really my whole life, since I was a young child, and music is a huge part of my spirituality. I think that when you're looking at the world and yourself in relation to it, that understanding that we're all completely connected is kind of like at the core of my spiritual belief system. So to me, if you harm something, you're harming yourself.
Yes.
If you harm something in your environment, if you're using, you know, poisons in your environment, you're poisoning yourself, you're poisoning the animals. So it's kind of a reciprocity.
Right.
Like, and then I just made an infinity symbol as I was talking. So there's like an infinity to that. But I've mainly read Buddhism.
Right.
About Buddhism.
And I know you conduct the kirtan as well, don't you? Where we sing spiritual songs, chants, and that kind of thing, which is quite popular these days to do that. And very powerful, I think. I've been doing it for years myself because I've been associated with the ashram called Skanda Vale, or the Community of the Many Names of God in West Wales. And I'd love to actually go there one time and interview the monks, because they do some wonderful work. But if you live in West Wales or anywhere in that part of the country, I definitely invite you to check it out. It's about 12 miles north of Carmarthen, and they conduct 6 pujas a day, mostly Hindu, but they honor Buddhism and Christianity and all other religions, and have a wonderful farm and a community there. What is your vision for the future, Nick? For you personally, what do you want to do in the remaining years of this incarnation?
To enjoy life. That's why I'm here. By enjoying life, that would mean not treading on other people's feet, you know, harming anybody else. But I love, I've always loved visual art, and I built an art studio. And it's been a challenge to find the time to get in there, but once I get in there and start drawing or painting, then I'm just completely gone, you know, I just love it. I think my greatest teachers are children, how they spontaneously draw and don't judge what they're doing. And I think of that when I'm creating, that, you know, because the mind comes in and says it's not as good as, or I think I could do better. But to leave that aside and just continue and just enjoy playing with the tools of the visual artist and seeing what comes out of it.
I think what's fun about being in this place is that there's no sort of heavy boundaries here, right? You may move in and through things. It's almost when we're sleeping in the place we're at, which is the studio, you know, nature is right there. There's the amazing cedar tree coming through the window at you. And the same where we are right now. We're sitting in the garden surrounded by all this beauty. And I like that idea of using what you have, being involved in it, you know. I know some people, the first thing they do with wasps or with those kind of animals is spray them, you know, to kill them. And I like to just knock the nest down because we have outside our front door we have daubers, and they can make a nest in a day, basically. And so you knock them down one day, there it is again. But rather than just kill them, you know, because I think that's, like you said, we're harming ourselves in that process. Dislocate them. You know, if you do it enough, they go somewhere else, hopefully. But, you know, we have to live with the things and allow them to flow in and through our lives rather than, you know, create an hermetically sealed environment. I think it was Liam last week said we're supposed to eat 5% dirt in our diet. So that tells you something right there. You know, if you hermetically seal yourself from any kind of dirt, you're impoverishing yourself. We need to be involved.
And I say that I ate dirt when I was little, and therefore I don't get sick now. And there's got to be something to it.
There we go.
Well, I read that if you eat dirt, you get B12 if you're a vegetarian. So.
See? Here's the dirt. Yeah. So we're tree-hugging dirt worshippers here, folks. So, state of the world. You know, the world is problematic sometimes, but it's always been that way, right?
Yeah.
Well, you know, there's a lot of solace in nature. You know, if you live in a city, and I lived in Seattle for 20 years, and you can always find beautiful parks, or walking down a sidewalk somewhere, you see a crack in the concrete and a dandelion growing out of it, or sometimes a tree. And that's always heartening to me. It shows who's really the boss. And here, we call this property Bird Perch Plateau because of all the birds here. When arrived here, and I wasn't aware of all the fantastic birds that we have. Like I said, three different kinds of woodpeckers and nuthatches and towhees, and I was introduced to birds that never even heard of. One thing Christine and I want to do here is open it up to other people, come and share what we have, because it's peaceful here. So we're in the midst of renovating a shed. It's a straw bale shed that's different to the house, because it's called load-bearing, which means there's no vertical posts. It's just straw bales stacked in a rough rectangle, 10 feet by 12 feet, and then the roof is put on top of the straw bale walls, and it compresses the bales. And it's a beautiful structure. In fact, the building inspector described it as a hobbit's house.
And when he says rough rectangle, he's talking about the fact that it waves around a little bit. Because Nick doesn't like anything that's too square or rectangle, as you can tell.
No straight lines in nature.
Well, this particular shed, as he puts it, I would call it a beautiful cabin. It waves around, so it gives you that sense of being in Hobbitville, yeah. That the whole thing here feels like... it's Lord of the Rings, basically. I could expect Gandalf to appear any moment here, actually.
Going back to, you know, you asked Nick the question about the world being a little chaotic out there, and coming into a place of solitude, revisiting that a place of solitude is so important, I think, to surviving in that world of chaos. And we were talking yesterday about building yourself, intentionally building yourself a sanctuary, intentionally building yourself an altar, intentionally building yourself a space that you can go within and spend the time to reorient yourself to a centered, peaceful energy, and how much easier it is to deal with the chaotic world when you take the time to do that.
Yeah, and adding to what you're saying on these, I really feel like these two sayings often swim through my brain. And one is Shakespeare. It's nothing good or bad, yet thinking makes it so. Mm-hmm. And then another one is, wherever you go, there you are. Mm-hmm. So that in our travel, in being here, sometimes we struggle when we go to America, is what we call it, when we leave the island. It's a common islander thing. We say, oh, gosh, we're going over there. But that's a perspective. That's what our thinking is creating that into.
Right.
And what you had asked about the state of the world, which is a little crazy for everyone at the moment, and future goals. So for me, those are tied together, is that do as much as I can inside of my own being to find that inner quiet and peace that can be available to you wherever you go and wherever you are, is that's always there. And what Wendy was talking about is to have that foundation and nourish that in yourself so that it's strong when you go into the miasma of life that's so unpredictable, and to have that foundation inside your being.
Yeah, very wise words. It always begins with us, and also it happens in the community. And Wendy and I were talking about that and the various communities we've experienced since we've been on the road here in a sabbatical, whether it be the community of Lewis on the Hebrides, which has its own interesting community sense, or the community in Hastings in Old Town, where we found so many interesting artists and musicians. There's quite a scene of those folks and shops of all kinds selling interesting things. This is an interesting vibe there. In our own communities, you know, how can we foster that sense of a community spirit, you know, that's important? I think we can do it everywhere. Every time I come to Whitby, and I've been here many, many times, we're trying to work out how many, it's been many, many times. It may not be the most scenically beautiful place. We're saying maybe Orcus is a little better, or the Olympics, but it's real close to those places. But it has a vibe. There's a certain energy here in Whitby, and you can feel that the community is very supportive. I know nothing's ever perfect. You were talking about a danger of a clear cut happening near you, but in general, I think people are thoughtful, yes, and they want to look after what they feel they have here, the specialness of this place.
Yeah, there's an area that was threatened to be a clear cut, not in this community, but called Trillium, and a lot of the community gathered together and saved it and put money in there and bought it from the loggers. And there is that definite caring for the land aspect here that's quite strong. Yeah,
and as we were saying too offline, now, this area is got a big support for loggers, because for hundreds of years now, since the first white people, I guess, logging's been an important industry and continues to be so. So this isn't an anti-logging program. We're not saying that that wonderful tradition and all the community that is around logging, you know, that's a wonderful tradition. But the thing is, we live in a world where we have to respect nature. There's a finite resource here, and so to wisely log. I think that's what we're talking about, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Rather than just despoil whole landscapes. And it's comforting that there's less clear-cutting now. There's more selective harvesting, and I think I'd like to see more of that in the future.
The logging up here in Fort Worth, where we live, we have our oil and gas industry that came in and had the natural gas in our area. And where it's important to share our resources, it's important to do it respectfully. And I think that there's a way of just coming in and totally destroying for only one mean, and then a way of looking at that goal or that mean of the, in this case, gas, and being able to extract it with still respecting the earth and still respecting the resource itself, and with taking in the picture as a whole, then I think the earth provides and gives back to you versus going in and just snaring one resource and plucking it out.
Right, yeah, there we go. It's a global sense. It starts with our connection to the whole, which is Mother Nature, and our own spiritual connectedness, and going from there. So we hope that, like we said, shows like this on this network of a Voice of an Awakening World teaches this message and helps us to live that message. This is one of the shows where I think I'd love to go just another couple hours, actually, because we just started. It's been a wonderful discussion. I want to thank Nick and Christine for being my guest today.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Yeah, it's been fun. I've enjoyed it.
Next week, folks, Wendy and I are going to be on Vancouver Island in Canada, and we'll be reporting from there. You want to say anything else, Wendy? I'll just go by.
No, I just want to say real quick, I'm going to shout out to our own community. We went to Fort Worth, dropped in, and I looked around. We went to a wedding, like Paul said, and I looked around and I thought, oh, wow, this is my community. These are my people. And it felt so good to see familiar faces and to see people that I love and love me. And I felt like that. And it was nice to see them. And I know whatever community you belong to, that give your joy to it.
That's right. Absolutely. Good lit. Parting words. All right. Thanks for listening in, folks, and hope you can join us next week. Until then, bye. Have a good one.
Many blessings.
Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Central to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org.
Of spiritually conscious living start now. For a time-tested method to live with purpose and release your infinite potential, tune in to the Yoga Hour, Living the Eternal Way, with Yogacharya Ellen Grace O'Brien, every Thursday morning at 10 a.m. Central, 8 a.m. Pacific, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
As a society, we're becoming more conscious of our responsibility to the environment. There are precious resources which must be properly managed. Although it is necessary for me to focus on these outer resources, it's equally important to develop my inner spiritual resources. Within every one of us is a wellspring of peace, a power which cannot be overused, yet often remains neglected. Every time I choose to think and act from that peace within, I bless not only my immediate environment, but the entire world as well. Peace is a precious resource that I can serve best by giving it away. Peace can begin with me.
To find a Unity Church near you, please visit our website at www.unity.org.
Sometimes you feel so alone and overwhelmed, you don't know where to turn. These days, it seems like there is no end to our problems. We invite you to connect with Silent Unity, the 24-hour prayer ministry where someone is waiting to pray with you right now. Since 1890, Silent Unity has always been there. No judgment or dogma, just someone affirming the best for you. Call 816-969-2000 today. You can also connect online at unityprayervigil.org.